As most of you know, maybe not the people that are new today, but others that have been here, this year we've been studying the Four Noble Truths. And this month our topic has been wise mindfulness. And in some ways, today I feel like my talk is really just a continuation of our discussion last week. For those who were here last week, we spent quite a bit of time just sharing our own experiences in working with mindfulness over the month. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today, more or less, you know, how things have been for me and what I've learned in this, well, not quite a month of mindfulness, but a few weeks of mindfulness. So last spring, when I was in Spirit Rock on retreat, towards the end of the retreat, the teacher started talking about how to bring the practice home. And one of the teachers, Vance Pryor, mentioned how his teacher, Sayadaw Ute Janiya, said to him something like, when you really bring mindfulness in your daily life, that's when you know how good life can be. And Vance said that at first he felt a little confused about this advice because he thought that he was already bringing mindfulness into his daily life, you know, in the ways that we often do. A daily practice, taking some time for mindful movement, being aware of thoughts and actions, and, you know, making sure that they were, as much as possible, kind and non-harming. But then he thought, well, maybe there's more to this than I realize. And so he really took his teacher's advice to heart and found that as he brought mindfulness more and more into all aspects of life, cats are trying to join. okay. So, yes. When he brought mindfulness more fully into his life, he was really began to understand what his teacher was talking about. And so this was kind of an inspiration to me. Like most of you, I feel like I do bring mindfulness into my daily life to some extent, but there's plenty of times when I'm not so mindful as I might be. So I thought that this would be a good intention for me this month to focus on really bringing mindfulness into my daily life. So as I started out on this project, one of the first things I discovered was that actually this isn't very easy. As Judith mentioned a couple of weeks ago, mindfulness is always available to us and it's always an option. And yet I found that maintaining mindfulness throughout my daily routine was pretty challenging. Now, there were times when there was so much going on that it was hard to be mindful, like the times when I was in the middle of a conversation with somebody or when something came up that was a little stressful and the emotions arose so quickly I couldn't really access mindfulness in that moment. But I have to admit that those kind of situations were more the exception than the rule, because a lot of the time I just didn't remember to pay attention. The habit of getting lost in thought is so strong that I would forget and there I would be, drifting away. And I also recognize that there were times when it wasn't so much that I forgot to be mindful, but I really didn't want to be mindful. I didn't really want to pay attention. Lately, I've been struggling with sloth and torpor with all the rain and the darkness and the short days, and maybe a lot of you have had some of those same kind of feelings. You know, sometimes all I wanted to do is just curl up on the couch with the cats and a good book. And, of course, there's times when that's exactly what is needed. That is just great to do. But it isn't what's needed all of the time. And I kind of think the cats would disagree with me about that, since as far as they're concerned, if I'm laying on the couch, being their human heating pad, that's the highest calling I could possibly aspire to in life. I mean, what could be more important? Except maybe giving them food and cleaning their litter box. But then, cats might not always be such a good source for Dharma advice. So, in any case, yes, there were those times when I could have been more mindful of my sloth and torpor. I could have reflected on what would be a wise action, but I didn't, because I just wanted to zone out and let myself get lost in distraction, maybe watching TV, maybe reading a novel, instead of being present. And then there were those times when I didn't want to pay attention because I was caught up in craving or aversion, wanting to do something that maybe wasn't the wisest thing to do, or not wanting to do something that really I would be better off doing. It wasn't so much that the craving overwhelmed me as that I chose to ignore it, ignore the wise advice to pause, consider, and instead just went ahead, eating that chocolate I didn't really need, skipping my yoga class, you know, whatever it was. The things that I gave into, it's not like they were terrible things, horrible things, really harmful things, but maybe not the wisest things either. And so I started realizing that actually maintaining some level of mindfulness in everyday life takes some determination. It takes a willingness to keep beginning again, just the same as we do when we're on the cushion, following the breath. It also takes some concentration for the mind to be at least somewhat stable and able to stay with whatever's going on in the moment. It takes some renunciation, too, to stop and pause and notice the wanting when we feel the desire to do something that our wisdom tells us isn't going to be so beneficial. When we have that urge to just zone out and get lost in one of the many, many distractions that are so available to us these days. We need some renunciation to be willing to pay attention and to see what's going on. And we also need patience, really a lot of patience, because at least in my experience, this isn't easy, and there's lots of times when I really don't maintain mindfulness. So determination, concentration, renunciation, patience. You know, some of these things feel sort of familiar from the time we spent working with the paramis. You know, those, cultivating these good qualities just comes in again and again. It's always useful. But on a more hopeful note, I've also been noticing that sometimes mindfulness is actually there, but it's not necessarily in the form that I imagine it should take. And so I think it's really helpful to remember that mindfulness doesn't always look the same. It isn't always the same on the cushion in our formal practice as we were kind of seeing in our meditation today. Sometimes it's very concentrated on one object, noticing every detail of that. Sometimes it's more a continuous awareness on things coming and going. Sometimes there's just this sense of resting in awareness. Maybe awareness is even in the foreground, objects in the background. And two, sometimes the object is the body, sometimes it's feeling tones, sometimes it's mental formations, all these four foundations come into play. But in all of these different cases, the mindfulness is still there. And it's like that in daily life, too. There are times I found that mindfulness was pretty focused, the way it sometimes is when I'm going for a walk and I'm just aware of the body moving through space. But other times it might be more just a kind of light noticing my attitude of mind. Am I feeling grouchy? Am I feeling sluggish? Am I feeling calm? Just enough to know what's going on and to avoid getting too caught up in mind states that are difficult or hindrances that might get me going into a course of action or thought that's not so helpful. Just enough mindfulness to keep from doing something I might later regret. You know, like those times when my brother calls up and starts ranting about something political, and well, usually I agree with him. Maybe I have the mindfulness to not get so obsessed and upset as he is. And I definitely see the four foundations of mindfulness show up as I go through my day, the focusing of the mind shifting from one to another. For example, one day I went to my yoga class at the Y thinking, oh, you know, this is a really great opportunity to practice mindfulness of the body. And for a while, that pretty much was what was predominant. I was noticing the sensations in the body, noticing the movements of the body. But then when we got into some of those poses that are a little more challenging and not so relaxing, what came up was feeling tone. Unpleasant, unpleasant. Oh, we have to do the reverse plank. Ooh, unpleasant. And then finally we were back in the child's pose. Oh, pleasant, pleasant. And then comparing mind came up. Oh, this person over here can really do this pose way better than I am. I can, you know, their form is so perfect. But then over here, here's this person that's really struggling. Wow, they're struggling a lot more than I am. Maybe I'm not so bad at this after all. And seeing all this, I could have this thought that, well, you know, I'm really not being mindful. I'm not staying mindful of my body. But really, mindfulness was there of the body, but also a feeling tone of comparing mind. And there was that part of my mind that just knew what was happening, but wasn't caught up in it. So there was mindfulness. Sometimes we do a little better than we give ourselves credit for. So seeing these different aspects of mindfulness has helped me from having a really rigid idea about what it means to be mindful or unrealistic ideas about mindfulness in daily life. And of course, it's impossible to live one's life as if we were on retreat and have that kind of mindfulness some of the time. But for sure, we can't do it all of the time as lay people. So good to have some flexibility. Another thing I've been recognizing is if I really want to bring more mindfulness into my life, I need to really have a clear sense of why I want to be mindful. It's not enough, at least for me, to just know I'm supposed to be mindful. That might work in the short term, but in the long term, not so much. You know, I really need to recognize the benefits of mindfulness. It's sort of like renunciation. When we don't want to practice it, a lot of times it's because we don't fully appreciate the benefits. And the same is true of mindfulness. So I've started to reflect on why I wanted to bring more mindfulness into my life. And everyone, I think, is going to have their own list of benefits of mindfulness. And we can all think about this. We'll all be a little different. But these are some of the things that I am seeing as benefits. One big one is that when I'm mindful, I find I really connect more fully to my experience. And so I'm more present for my life. And one of the best things is that I'm really able to appreciate the small, beautiful things in life and to take an interest in things that maybe otherwise I would just overlook. For example, one morning I was taking a walk on a cloudy and drizzly day, kind of like we're having now, and I could have just been complaining to myself about how bad the weather was and how I wished the sun was out. But instead, I was seeing what was there, and I found that I was really appreciating how beautiful things were, how beautiful the mountains looked as they were kind of peeking out from the clouds, like one of those old Chinese paintings, or feeling how beautiful the air smelled. And when I take that kind of time to really connect with what's happening right now, a lot of the times I can feel that what is really enough. I don't really need anything more or anything different or anything better. This is how it is, and that's okay. And this is a really important thing for me. It really brings a sense of joy and contentment to my life that I might not have if I didn't take the time to be mindful. And of course, being mindful of my attitude of mind really does help me to avoid doing things or saying things that later I'll regret. Now, I don't always find the capacity to be mindful. I don't always want to be mindful in these situations. But I know that if craving is present, if aversion is present, this is a sign that I really need to pause to see what's going on before I act. And when I do this, I'm usually glad that I did. Mindfulness of thought is helpful too, because if I'm mindfulness here, I remember that I don't need to take everything that crosses my mind so seriously. That grouchy complaint about the clerk at the store that was so slow, or that political rant that starts up. Yeah, okay, it's there. But that doesn't mean I have to dwell on it, or keep coming back to it, or making a big issue of it. The irritation or the frustration arises, but then it passes, so it doesn't have to be an ongoing problem. And maybe, in a way, what's especially is important is that if I'm mindful, I'm more open to all those things that we really want to see and know when we're working with the Four Noble Truths. Impermanence, dukkha, anatta, craving, and the end of craving, small moments of insight, small moments of freedom, all those kind of understandings that deepen wisdom, and that I might not really be able to see if I don't bring mindfulness to my life. And maybe the final thing is that this effort of bringing more mindfulness in my life is something that's, well, I can't say it's just at the beginning, but definitely it's not anywhere near the end. It's not like I'll do this month and then it's one and done. Way far from it. Or I can feel like, okay, I've practiced it, now I've mastered it. Not that way either. It's an aspiration that I can bring into my life next month, next year, and beyond. An aspiration for a lifetime, really. And I'm hoping that as I continue to understand even more and more of what it means to bring mindfulness into daily life, I'll understand more and more what Sayadaw Utejaniya said, that when you bring mindfulness in daily life, you'll really see how good things can be. So, thank you for listening. Nice to have you here and your wise attention, kind attention. So now we have some time for breakout rooms. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. Hope you had a good discussion this morning. So now we have some time for sharing. If you would like to share anything with the larger group about what you talked about, your mindfulness discoveries, anything that's coming to mind for you, you're most welcome to do that, and you can let me know that you'd like to speak by raising your virtual hand, or since I can see everybody here pretty good, you can also raise your actual hand, and I should be able to let you know. Suze. Oh, please unmute yourself. Oh, here she is.
I loved your list of why am I wanting to be mindful, and one of the things I realized, and I add to your list, is I love learning more about the mind. And so it's been really helpful. And then, of course, the challenge is to put into practice what I've learned. But the mindfulness keeps reminding me of what I've just learned, and it gives me perspective. So thank you for that beginning list, and I offer that one as another.
Thank you. That is a really good one, because it's actually quite fascinating what we learn about the mind when we actually pay attention to it. Yeah, thanks, Suze. Great. Judith.
Yeah, I also liked your list. And one thing we talked about quite a bit in our group is how much time and energy, and I'll say this for myself personally, I have wasted rehearsing the future and fretting about things that never happened, and how compulsive it is. And that the reason it's so compulsive is because we don't trust things to work out. We feel like we've somehow got to control it, which we can't do anyway, you know. So, yeah, that whole part. And I'm looking for ways to bring more mindfulness to that part of my life, because it really is becoming annoying, you know. I mean, I see it, you know. And so I don't know, maybe the first step is to accept, okay, yeah, that's what the mind's doing, and not get so frustrated with myself because it's doing that. Maybe that's the first step.
Yeah, that is a good first step. And then I think too, when I notice my mind doing that, sometimes I'm able to say, okay, you don't need to do that. Let's go back to what's happening now. Right. Sometimes I can do that. A lot of times the habit is so strong. And as you say, the feeling of fear about it not turning out well is so strong, it's hard to stop. But
yeah, like I've got to be prepared for this situation. Right. I mean, exactly. What will happen if I, and then it never even happens, you know?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, that's
that might be another good one to add to the list of not getting so caught up in worrying about the future and regretting the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thomas. Oh, you're still muted. Oh, here we go.
Sorry about that.
It takes a while.
I've been curious over the years about the connection between mindfulness and simplicity. In some of what you said, Linda, I see a connection that I'm curious to explore a bit. So it's basically when you talk about, you know, sort of the bringing mindfulness to the day-to-day. So the ordinary things we all do, like washing your dishes or grocery shopping, vacuuming, all that stuff, you know, you do, and you bring mindfulness into that. What I've experienced is when I do that, I see a richness that I didn't see before. I just want to get the dishes done, you know, move on to the next thing that's more satisfying. And then when you actually start bringing mindfulness in and start to see how rich these things are, I realize that I actually need less, you know, big experiences or big things, because what I have, there's a lot to see there and unfold in that. And I've seen sort of some simplifying of my life coming from that. But curious, curious about what connections you might see there.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does bring more simplicity into life. It's brought more simplicity into my life in certain ways, in the sense of just not having to have or feeling I have to have so many things. And I'm glad to hear that you experience this too, because I don't know, for me, that aspect of mindfulness is one of the ones that's most motivating to me, is the way that it helps me to really appreciate my life as it is and to not need more than what is happening. So thank you for sharing your feelings on that and that connection with simplicity. It really is there, I think. Let's see, Gwendolyn, I think you're next.
Thank you. Kind of tagging along of mindfulness and day-to-day activities and the fast-paced, something I had asked for feedback in my group. I'm a single mother. I work full-time while also mothering full-time. And I've noticed, especially in this last week, so from last week's talk, one of the things I took away was trying to find moments to celebrate when I am mindful, but then became aware that as the day went on, depending on the day, it happened at different times, and I kind of reached my capacity for the day. And being aware that I'm not mindful, right? And that I'm just at my capacity. Some of the feedback that I had asked for was just slow down, you know, rather than just trying to get through the dishes, to get to the next thing, to then get to the bath time, to then get to bedtime, you know, of like just slowing down. And I really appreciated that suggestion and something I'm hoping to move through to the next day. And then also a thought that I thought I would share. Because we're all in this human experience and we're not monks in a monastery, that maybe it is enough just to recognize, to be aware that we're not being mindful or that we're at our capacity. Maybe that is enough. That it's not about the attainment of, I'm a perfectionist, right? Not the attainment of perfectionism of mindfulness, right? But just the awareness. So I'm just really grateful for all of the insight that my room shared and the thoughts and their own experiences. And yeah, just wanted to share that with the group, since it's a smaller group after the group. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you too. You know what you are saying about reaching capacity? That really resonates with me too, because I find myself feeling that way, that, you know, by the evening, I'm sort of like, okay, I've reached my capacity. There's this, that's when the desire to sort of zone out with the book or the TV really becomes predominant, and I don't want to worry about anything anymore. Yeah, so I can really relate to that. And I think, you know, what the advice of slowing down, and maybe I'm beginning to think maybe there are ways to be mindful in those kind of situations that don't have to be quite so intense, you might say, or focused, you might, like sort of noticing that is there. And that kind of light awareness of your attitude of mind, sometimes that I can do that in itself, or just being with the feeling of tiredness. So I'm trying to work with that too, also with this feeling like I've reached my capacity for trying to do anything else and understand how to bring mindfulness to those periods when we really want to just rest. So thanks a lot, Gwendolyn. That's great. And Lauren, I think you're next.
There we go. Well,
Yeah, there's just a lot, because we had a really good group discussion, and there's a lot that I appreciated with the people I was who were sharing in my group, but I don't want to talk about their shares, because I need to talk about my own experience. So one of the things is that in being mindful, especially last month, I really had to be mindful of some very unpleasant things. Like I really felt, oh, I am really hooked. How did this happen? You know, all this aversion is coming up. And then, and I couldn't abandon, you know, like I thought I need to abandon this, but I couldn't abandon it. And it just all played out. And so part of me was like, oh, I'm a bad person. I mean, I was really going to the layers. But I knew that it was important to not turn away, to just keep watching this. You know, how is this going to play out? And what could I learn from it? Maybe I can't learn from it right in this moment, but I can still, you know, learning. I mean, I did see that there's a lot of learning, even in the unpleasant experiences. And now that I've had some time, you know, past that, I have learned a great deal. And I am very glad it happened, because of how much, you know, I've learned. And it also opened me to really the full catastrophe. I think there's somebody wrote a story about the full catastrophe of life, that I do need to be open to that. And, you know, and I'm a sensitive human being, so all these things are going to affect me. And mindfulness can really take a lot. It's not a fragile thing. You know, it really can take a lot. And and just seeing that being mindful is a grounding, you know, that we have that grounding, that anchor to go back to, and a great deep appreciation of mindfulness. So thank you for bringing that up. And and that was part of looking at the mind states and the pleasant and the unpleasant and all that, but that's a part of it all. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's just a really wonderful expression of how mindfulness can be there, even in the most difficult times, when we almost feel like it's not. So thank you. And then Sherry, and then we can close. We might go a few minutes over, but hopefully that's okay.
I'll try to be brief. There's an image of an anchor that Lauren just made, and then Lyndall, you had said earlier something about lightness. And I think that I'm very captivated by the duality there, that it's both. And I was very touched by hearing Gwendolyn, and I was thinking about my practice as I've been a parent. And I think that this, one doesn't need to be a parent to identify with this, but I there are times when I use my meditation practice to manage myself, mm-hmm. and to manage things. And I also realize that as a mother and a woman in this capitalist culture and so on, I'm a manager. That's my role. And I need a break from that. And so there's something about this kind of, you know, this lightness quality that you brought in, Linda, like I identify with that, as, you know, that mindfulness is not something that I need, that I do all the time, but that I can allow to surprise me. Mm-hmm. That it might be, as I think Sue said, in our small group perspective. And so Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for the really wonderful sharing. We're a small group here, but I think we've had a lot of rich wisdom. And I'd like to be fairly brief as we close here with a few announcements. So the main event that's coming up soonest is Philip Moffat's non-residential retreat. On December 5th in the evening, he'll be doing a talk, and then the 6th and 7th, Saturday and Sunday, we'll be offering an online retreat. And from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And the title is Liberating the Ego, Humility, Dignity, and Integrity. So for those of us who may have gone to our Daylong and Anatta, maybe liberating the ego is a subject that's very up in our minds. And I know a lot of you have attended other retreats with Philip, and you know that's really an event to look forward to. So I encourage you to attend if you can. If you can't go for both days, one day is fine. And we will not be having a Sunday sit on December 7th. So we will give people the opportunity to go to Philip's retreat. And you do need to register. You can sign up on the SIMS website. And then a couple other things for the future. In January, Steve Wilhelm and Carrie Peterson will be offering introductory meditation courses, with Steve on the east side and Carrie at our center in the university district. So if you're interested in a refresher or you have friends, that might be something to think about. And then also at the end of January, on the weekend of January 31st, our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, is going to be offering an online non-residential weekend on the theme, Merging the Heart Sutra with the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And apparently, it sounds that this will be Rodney's final non-residential with Seattle Insight, so you might want to make a special effort to attend to be able to be there and take advantage of Rodney's teaching. And then, of course, Donna, if you feel moved to offer Donna, it's always greatly appreciated. Helpful for the teachers, and I think helpful to the SIMS organization especially too. It's a gift for all of us to support our organization. And you can contribute on the SIMS website. So as we end our meeting for today, I'd like to take a moment to share the merit of our practice. And to do this, I'd like to share with you some really beautiful words I received on a card from the Vallecitos Mountain Retreat Center in New Mexico about sharing merit. And this is a beautiful place to practice if you have the opportunity to do so. And they offered some beautiful words. So, this is what they said. May I use all that arises for my own awakening. May I rest in the truth of our relatedness. May the beneficial energies that are generated through my practice be for the welfare of all beings, through all realms, throughout space and time. And may this stream of goodness travel especially where it is needed most.